This is PhotoBiz X, episode number 560. And today we have underwater portrait photographer legend, Mallory Morrison. And I know you're going to love what she has to share. Whether or not you agree with the way she's doing business, or you would take a totally different tact. Now, what I'm referring to will become totally clear in the interview, but it's how you would weigh up becoming or being a fine art photographer or a traditional, in air quotes, portrait photographer working for profit. Now, Mallory is proof that you can succeed with both approaches, but I know her approach may challenge the way you think about your photography. That interview is coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the PhotoBiz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here, host of the PhotoBiz X podcast, where I interview guests from around the world to help you build a better photography business even faster than going it alone. And I know you're going to fall in love with Mallory, just like I did. She was an incredible interview guest, so well-spoken, so thoughtful. And even though I pushed her with some of the questions I did put to her, I think she handled them just beautifully. And I truly love the way she's approaching her business, her photography, even though there could be an easier path to success. Anyway, I'd love to hear your thoughts, and we're going to get into that in just a minute. Before we do get into that, I am super, super excited about an upcoming masterclass with photography business and mindset coach Joel Dunn and his studio manager, now assistant Jacinta. I've got to find out Jacinta's surname. I don't know what it is. But what you may not know is Joel, while he had his photography business, was running a very, very successful marketing strategy, which was based around community fundraising. Now, I've known about this strategy for a couple of years now. I had been twisting Joel's arm to come on and share exactly how that strategy works. He was not prepared to do that while he had his photography business. He has since gone full-time into photography business coaching. I immediately hit him up again to come on and share this strategy with you, and he has agreed to do that, which is just amazing. Now, to give you some idea, this particular masterclass is only for portrait photographers. You do need to be willing to do some work to get this to actually work for you. And you will see from the testimonials that I've got on the registration page as soon as that goes live, is that is the case. But this really does work. It's brought in hundreds of thousands of dollars for Joel and his studio. And it's also continued to do exactly the same for the people he has coached on how to implement this into their studios. Now, in addition to being a portrait photographer, you do need to be doing in-person sales to get the most out of this strategy. But to give you some idea of how good this could be for your business, Nick Buttigieg, who you will be familiar with if you've been listening to the podcast for any length of time, he says the community fundraising strategy has been epic for us in our studio, a really good way to diversify your leads and your bookings away from Facebook. I highly recommend it. It has been an absolute game changer for our business. It is solid. It works every time. I've had upwards of 300 to 400 leads each time I implement the strategy. That is amazing. And this one from Ben Potter, he says, half my sessions this year have come from this strategy with a sales average of $1,950, so you do the math. Once the relationships are established with the businesses, schools, clubs, then they continue for years to come. Just incredible. So I'm going to have the registration page up and available to you, I hope, by the time this interview goes live. So if you go to photobizx.com/community, you can read more about what's included with this training. Just like past training that I've hosted on the PhotoBizX platform, the cost is $197. The price will double after the live training, which is happening in 2 weeks' time, so Tuesday the 23rd of April. I've had to move fast on this. I want to get in before Joel changes his mind. And the good news is if you do register before the live training, you do get in at that special price. You do get the recording, all the associated downloads where everything will live on the PhotoBizX website. So you'll have access to that anytime afterwards, even if you cannot make the live training. And of course, there's a 100% money back guarantee. So if you implement what Joel shares and you don't get the results, then you let me know and I will happily refund you 100%. At the end of the day, I want you to be successful with whatever you purchase in regards to training, the premium membership, any masterclass that I'll be hosting here on the PhotoBizX platform. So again, more details at photobizx.com/community. Do not go into this though if you are not prepared to do a little bit of work. But by all accounts, if you do implement what Joel and Jacinta have to share, then it sounds like the results will be absolutely incredible. Oh, and I should have added on that registration page, I'll have a link where you can see the time of the live training in your local time zone. It is going to be 7 a.m. here in Australia, Sydney local time. That's the best time I could find that might be appealing to you wherever you are in the world. And I know it will not be super attractive if you are in Europe. It might be challenging if you are in New Zealand, but rest assured you will have access to the recording if you cannot make the live training, and you will have a chance to hit both Joel and Jacinta up with any questions you have after the training once you've seen it, if you do register for that live training.
You're listening to the number one photography business podcast with Andrew Helmich, photobizx.com.
Okay, we are going to jump into this interview with Mallory Morrison. If you are hearing this announcement, it does mean you are listening to the free version of the podcast. Now, what that means is you will not hear the full interview today with Mallory. I am saving a large portion of the second half for premium members only. The good news, you can access the full interview for as little as $1 with a 30-day trial membership. And there are more details about that over at photobizx.com/try. And I can assure you, you do not need to be an underwater photographer to get the most from what Mallory has to share today.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
Today's guest is a US-based underwater portrait photographer, and I have to tell you, her photography is absolutely stunning. Now, I'm already excited about this one because I was introduced to her via Brett Stanley, who I've interviewed on the podcast, another incredible underwater photographer, with this message. He says, Andrew, meet Mallory, underwater photography legend. Now, Mallory started out as a dance photographer because of her background as a dancer. However, once she found the freedom offered by the lack of gravity when shooting in the water, she was hooked. And today, her main source of income is from selling fine art underwater prints, although she does offer some limited luxury underwater portraiture to individuals and couples. And she says one of her biggest regrets in business is undervaluing the sale of her work for so long. Now she has a demand from collectors who she deals with directly. She's taken control of her sales and her profits. I'm talking about the super talented underwater photographer legend, Mallory Morrison, and I am rapt to have her with us now. Mallory, welcome.
It's so wonderful to be here. I love that intro.
Legend.
Legend.
That's who you're being introduced by other underwater photographers. So why would Brett say that about you? And I'm giving you the platform to talk about yourself here. Like, have you been doing this for a long time? Are you the most successful underwater photographer? What makes you, in his eyes, the legend?
Well, I have been doing it for a number of years. I've been shooting for about 17 years now. But I think what really solidified his vision of me in his head is when he was in his beginning journey of finding photography and finding underwater, he found my work. And I was doing a lot of sets, not huge sets like he does, but just using props, utilizing something other than just a beautiful dancer or model in the pool. And that really inspired him to try it. And then now that's his business. So I've had a part in his career and I now shoot in his pool and I live down the street from him now.
Wow. That is so cool.
Yes.
So you're based in LA.
Yes.
And I alluded to the fact that you were a dancer. Is that primarily who you focus on photographing today? Is it dancers?
Yes. So I use dancers as my subjects and my models that I cast and hire. And then I like to, if I do commissioned portrait, I like to just know if they have any movement or dance experience. That's super helpful, but not a necessity.
Right. So when you say commissioned portrait, is that someone coming off the street, someone who's seen your work and says, oh my God, I want that?
Yes.
Right. And can that be anyone?
Anyone. Usually, I have never turned anyone down. But usually it's self-filtering. It's usually people that see my work and they want to see themselves in that same way. And my first official commission portrait was originally, it was from somebody who was actually looking to buy art and was interested in buying my work just as a print. And then the question was, well, could I be that person in the photograph in my house? And I said, oh, okay, yeah, okay. Sure. It was tentative of like, okay, sure. And I actually really loved it. It's a very different challenge for me to work with people who are not necessarily dancers, because dancers, not only the reason why I shoot dancers is not only because they're graceful, right? And they've got a lot of poses that they're bringing to the table, but the way that they take instruction is so perfect for underwater, because it's taking on information, taking in basically choreography and keeping it in their head and actually being able to translate that into their body and actually do it. Because someone can be listening and can be taking it in their brain, but if they're not basically skilled in that ability to translate it into their body, it's just once they're underwater, it's just this flailing like, okay, did I do it? It's like, you would know if you did it. No, you didn't do it, but we'll work with this. So with dancers, there's a shorthand that I'm able to do because of having so much ballet experience. And I'm usually working with people who are either professional ballerinas or have had ballet experience as a base for their dance. So that just makes a big difference. I'm able to show them a little bit, just standing in the shallow and show them a little bit of how to move their hands, how to move their face. And that helps me too, because I like to show, I'm a visual person. I like to show rather than just completely explain everything with words. It's my least favorite form of communication is words. So,
well, I was going to ask you, and I have a basis for this question, so it doesn't sound as ridiculous as it might to the listener, but can you communicate with your model, your subject, while you're underwater? And the reason I ask that is because I did do a tour of the Institute of Sport, and their coaches can walk along underwater, like in a corridor next to the pool, or be above the pool and actually speak to the swimmer or diver and give them directions. So can you do that?
Not to that level. It's very, very rudimentary. And some subjects can't really, it doesn't really work with everyone. But I have worked with this woman, Linnea. She goes by Underwater Linnea on Instagram. We've shot together a few times. She's an underwater model and she can actually hear when my camera clicks. She can hear the chunk, chunk, because it kind of echoes in the underwater housing that my camera's in. And so she can kind of hear that sound. And that kind of acts like Morse code. And in the way where it's like, if she hears like, she knows that something is really right, milk it, like keep making it happen. And if she doesn't hear anything, that means either she needs to change her pose or just come up to the surface. And so that is like our little communication. But other than that, I'm mostly following them as far as their lead of how long that they want to stay underwater. And I'm just there and observing the scene that I've set and just letting them perform it.
Right. So you're not using strobes?
I am sometimes.
Okay, because the dancer, the subject would see the strobes too, wouldn't they?
Yes. I use strobes mostly as a light front fill sometimes in the back, but it's really not that bright because I'm not trying to light the entire swimming pool with strobes. I'm really, really love using as much natural light as I can because I love that soft lit, top lit feel. So they could see that, but no, you know, I like to have things be consistent. So no matter what I'm doing with lighting, I know how I can communicate with them. And it's usually just let them be in it, and then come up when they're ready.
Wow. Are you wearing or utilizing scuba gear yourself, or are you just holding your breath like the dancer?
I hold my breath. So it's fancily called free diving. I call it fancy because I'm only under a foot. So I would dare to say it is not free diving. It's holding your breath, but I am actually not scuba certified, which has been a long contested question of why am I not scuba certified, or why shouldn't I? And wouldn't there be amazing places that you could go? And but I basically like to say that I am a studio photographer rather than a environment photographer. So I don't shoot in the ocean. I've shot in the cenotes in Mexico, the freshwater pools, once. Loved it. It was intense, very different process for me, but loved it. But I'm mostly 99% of the time I'm in a swimming pool.
I've got so many questions. I do want to talk more about the actual shooting process and what goes into a day or a session. But with the business side of things, like when you first discovered underwater photography, and you know, you'd been photographing dancers, tell me about your business vision. Was it to sell fine art photography? Was it to get commissioned client shoots and you know, do in-person sales and make fantastic wall art for clients? Like, what was the business vision at the beginning?
Well, at the beginning, I was coming out of a photo school where I was at Brooks Institute of Photography, and it was a very commercial focused school. I actually have my focus, or my major, was commercial photography. And so I set out to be an underwater fashion photographer, which is laughable at this point, because fashion photography already is such a competitive and intense industry. And let's say the attitudes and the people that it attracts, they're not my people. And so to then be able to try to do fashion underwater, which is even more narrow, would be, I would stand out and I would be very, very niche. But for any kind of magazine that would want to do a spread, they kind of want to check that box once of like, yeah, we did an underwater episode, basically. You know, we did one in one issue, and then like, we can't like do it again, like for another 10. I've actually heard this. I was like, well, we kind of have to wait like 10 years before we do another one. So it just felt like, I mean, no pun intended, but the pool kept getting smaller and smaller as far as what my options were. And I was reaching out to, I had a whole database of art buyers. I was reaching out to ad agencies all the time. And it was just this endless silence. I would get a no every once in a while, but I would just hear nothing. And that's going to be hard on anyone. But that was about that time. It was about kind of 2 years after school that I just kind of was kept trudging along in this journey, that I met with a friend who's a graphic designer, and he has a studio. And he's like, we have this beautiful lobby area that we do shows in every once in a while. Do you have any personal work that you want to maybe show? We do a little gallery show. And I was actually able to kind of work with him, and he helped me kind of refine what I want my artistic style to be, where I can still have a sense of fashion, but it's not the focus. It's not the intention. It's not the purpose of the photo. What is it saying? And how can I visually express that in multiple different ways rather than just, you know, a nice cleaned up image in Photoshop from the original? How do I build a photograph in my imagination? What do I see in my imagination? And then how can I use photography as the tool to get there? So that was it.
Even with that vision, like, what were you trying to accomplish? Like, even with that exhibition, were you trying to attract commission client shoots, you know, the general public, dancers, or were you trying to sell art?
I was trying to sell art.
Right. Okay. So that was that the business focus?
Yeah. So that was, yeah, that was the, it was trying to be a photographer for hire for fashion underwater photography. And then it was, wait, I actually could sell the work that I just do because I love it. And then I did have in that show, I had someone buy my piece that they don't know me at all. And they just bought it because they want it in their house. And that was such a validation and a special moment of saying, wait, so, okay, this could be a thing.
That sounds exhilarating. It sounds incredible. Like you must have been on such a high selling that first or that one piece. But to me, like, it's still unrealistic. I mean, you need to sell more than one piece to have a sustainable business. So like, how long did it take for you to think, okay, this really does have legs? Because selling one isn't enough. Sure, it might get you excited, but I mean, then you have to sell another and another and another. I mean, surely the dancing public would be a much easier option to generate an income.
Yeah. That would have been easier. I guess I just never really thought of the business model of being a portrait photographer for hire underwater. It was like, I kind of wanted this underwater project, I guess it started as, to be special and only just for what I want it to be. That if somebody needs headshots, sure. I mean, I used to shoot real estate photography for a long time because it was just great. It was so easy, you know, and headshots and all other things that photographers make money on. And so that was like kind of the hodgepodge of finding other ways to make money and diversifying. But I wanted the underwater passion to stay pure in the way that I'm only making work that I love and that I feel proud of sharing and potentially selling.
You painted a better picture now for me and the listener. Like you were in the trenches financing these underwater art projects, you know, just to bring in an income, photographing whatever you could.
Yeah.
So back then, I mean, it sounds like, well, again, you painted that picture of you as a photographic artist, not as much a photographer for hire. It sounds to me like you're approaching your photography from an art perspective rather than a business perspective. Would that be right or not?
For underwater, yes. And then knowing, because going to photo school, we learned so many different types of photography. So I knew I had that kind of jack of all trades sort of skill set that I could use if I needed to. And I also did a lot of assisting and everything. So I just wanted the underwater to be just what I wanted it to be. And most of those were self-financed. I did a couple magazine shoots and stuff that they had a little budget. But other than that, everything was pretty much self-financed.
Let's fast forward to today. How do you see yourself now? You know, which pigeonhole do you put yourself into? Photographic artist, business operator, or something else?
Both. I think that a lot of artists shy away from the business side, and it's the greatest challenge of my life is building a artistic business and being able to emotionally separate myself as the artist and what I feel about the work that I create and feeling like it's from my heart, from my soul. It's my child. It's it is sacred and I want to protect it. And then on the other side of, okay, this business has a product to sell. The product is art prints. How can I get these placed and get them awareness and get them sold to as many people as I possibly can? So I have multiple personalities.
like all of us. So with the business now, what's the revenue these days?
Last year was good. It was about 80,000, and that's from a multiple different avenues, but about 50 of that was print sales.
Wow. Okay. So prints are selling.
Yes.
Okay. And then in the intro and on your website, you know, it does say that you take some limited commission shoots for individuals and couples. Does that make up a big portion of that 80,000?
Not really. No. So I think per shoot, I average about 3,000 for each commission shoot. That's after my expenses and with additional image orders. So I like to limit how many commissions that I offer. So I only offer 6 commission portrait sessions a year. And I've had a few photographers say, why limit? I'm sorry, you want to cap how much you can make?
My questions.
What are you doing? This is not, but what I've found is that, so first of all, I have a shooting season because I'm shooting outside. So I need to have it to be, I need it to be warm enough because I am a wimp when it comes to cold water and cold weather. So I have the pool heated to 90 degrees, even in the summer. I don't know what that is in Celsius. Sorry. So 90 degrees Fahrenheit. And then I utilize natural light. So I want to have there be enough sunlight. So it can't, even if it's a randomly warm day in January, the light is really low. So I want to shoot about, I start shooting if I can help it around like April or so, and then go to about October. And that's my shooting season. And so if I have 6 portrait sessions, if I could, you know, best case scenario, if I could do one a month for 6 months, what that does is that it funds my other projects. And I even sometimes I have the pool booked out for the entire day for a commission portrait session. So they're paying for the entire day of the pool. However, the portrait session is only 2 or 3 hours. So I will have a portrait session and a client shoot in the morning and take a break for lunch, and then have a personal shoot come in the afternoon. And so I can kind of piggyback on that expense, and it's already covered to be able to self-produce personal work. So I like to be able to kind of mix the two together, but I don't want my focus to be shifted towards commission portrait sessions and marketing that.
Why not?
Because there's a lot of marketing to do for print sales, and that's what I actually want to do. And I am also wanting to really kind of focus on separating myself from time for money. And when I kind of batch basically my production, where I am shooting a lot, a couple of shoots, and I'm shooting a lot and creating a lot of artwork, I can then sell, you know, depending on who wants to buy it, I can then sell that print for years and years and years. I have a print that I just sold last week that I produced 12 years ago, and it's still selling, and it's a limited edition print, but it still has some left in the edition, and I continue to sell it. So my production expenses have long been covered, especially if I'm smart about being able to piggyback off of commission portraits and have my expenses for my personal work be really low. And then I can sell a print. It takes me about the same amount of time to sell and to produce a print that is a small print and a super duper large print, because it's sending the print order to my printer, getting it shipped out. So I can, you know, I can make easily $4,000 in a day from one print sale that it took me, you know, maybe half an hour to do, rather than doing a whole shoot and working with the commission portrait client and holding their hand through the whole process, which I want to do. And I want to be present for them in that process. And I don't want it to feel like a factory. I don't want them to feel like I'm like, okay, next. Okay, same old, now it's you. I want to really be able to take the time to really see not only what they want, but also what their body wants to do, and be able to interpret that to mold them into the best version of themselves. And that takes a lot of attention that I want to give them.
For sure. First, please understand, I am in full admiration of the way you approach your business, the fact that you are so focused on the art. And I love that business model, the fact that you can, you know, go on and sell a limited edition print for years, potentially, and see that recurring income. But I really want to throw a couple of hypotheticals at you, because I know the listener is probably thinking or wanting me to ask these questions. And they are hypothetical, but let's say, for example, and I imagine this could really be a reality for you, with the kind of images that you create, which are incredible, I could see you selling those prints to commission clients and having $10,000 sessions instead of $3,000 sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, for example, you could bring in these $10,000 clients and have, you know, one or two of those a month. Would that make that side of the business way more appealing and encourage you to pursue that side more?
I am not really. I mean, the reason why I am doing the commission portrait is the money is absolutely a factor in offering commission portraits. But just the way that I've structured my pricing is the same as how I've structured my pricing for my prints, where it is a certain level of a, it's high enough to say this is a lot of value and it's specialized and it's rare. However, I also really want to make this as accessible as I possibly can. So it is a, it's a balancing act in between those two things, that my prints as fine art prints could be selling for a lot more. I could just jack up the prices. I could raise the prices every year and have a smaller or smaller pool of people to buy them. But I really enjoy being able to sell my work to the type of buyer who buys my work now is the buyer that I really enjoy. Someone who has a couple thousand dollars, they really want to invest in something special that means something to them and potentially has some investment value, but they're not just buying art for an investment to be put in storage. They're buying it because they want to see it in their house every day and it really means something to them. And I think that goes same for the commission portrait sessions, that it is something that might be a little stretchy as far as their budget, but this is really important and special for them to do. And this isn't something that they're going to just do all the time. And I have worked with some clients who they probably think that my portrait session prices are a little cheap and they never really did anything with them. They didn't post them. They didn't order any prints. And I feel like there's a, like when you have skin in the game, when you're putting your hard earned money into something, it means something. And I think that I really value that connection with people.
So I understand that, Melanie. Did you just say that some commission clients thought that you were too cheap and that's why they didn't do anything with the photo? Is that what you said?
That's my interpretation of it.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
So you just had a gut feel from them that they could afford or they could have spent a lot more if your prices were higher.
I know for sure that they could have spent a lot more.
Wow.
Because I shot at their house.
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. So like a couple grand here and there is like, sure, whatever.
So why did they hire you?
Because they wanted to do it. Like, oh, this would be fun. Like, yeah, that'd be really cool. And I love the images and I share them all the time. And it was very worthwhile for me as well. And I'm sure that they loved them, but it isn't necessarily saying that they don't value it, but it was an interesting contrast from someone who I shot with who is a mother of three and she has had a long time of not feeling like she is kind of not only a kind of her own person, but also sensual and beautiful and feel like she's actually a work of art. And that was something that was really so valuable for her to have that experience. And not to say that someone who is wealthier wouldn't have that experience. I might be kind of like digging myself into a hole here right now.
Not at all. Not at all.
But I want to have it be accessible as much as possible, but also taking into account the rarity and the skill level it takes to produce it.
For sure. Can you use, or are you able to, or do you use images that you've created for a client that's paid you for a session? Can you use that as a fine art print as well?
Premium members of PhotoBiz Exposed hear more of the best photography business strategies from every guest.
So when I go to your online store, if I go to Saatchi or anyone else that's representing you or in person, if I see you presenting at one of these shows or showing your work, what's the first thing I see? I mean, obviously the images, but am I seeing that these are limited edition art pieces? Like what makes your art valuable? What is it that people are looking for when they buy it?
Lots of different things. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me.
I think the majority of the time people, the edition number is very like, okay, sure. Whatever. You know, they're not really like, ooh, this, I mean, there are some people that are like, ooh, I got the first in the edition. Like, that's a thing. Cool. Okay. Or I got the last in the edition. Definitely. But anything in the middle is kind of like, okay, so, all right. They're not really concerned necessarily about that part of it, even though they like the idea that it's limited. I think that having it be open edition would be like, it wouldn't really kind of align. But the main reason people are drawn to buy my work is the work itself, the imagery, and then also making sure that it's printed accurately for how I want it to be presented. Colors are right. It's a really beautiful, heavyweight, fine art paper that's got a little bit of a satin sheen. So it's got like kind of like a little wet look to it and presented well so that the physical piece of it is something very well made. But then the image itself is just what I hear a lot is just like, I've never seen this before. This is so unique. I just feel like I've been transported into this whole other world, and it just makes me feel so calm. And that's exactly what I'm wanting to go for, because that's what's so rewarding about sharing my work, because I can just make this for myself. But to have it for sale, there's that interaction there and the relationship that I have with the person who buys my work.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I love it. I love it. Where is the best place, Mallory, for the listener to go and see these incredible images? Should they go to your website? Should they go somewhere else, one of these galleries?
Yeah, so my online store and website is mallorymorrison.com. And it's hosted by Shopify. And it's a print store, but there's also lots of information, mostly for collectors, of just kind of understanding the whole like print process and learning a little bit more about me. And also I offer digital mock-ups for people. So if they're like, I have this wall, I don't know what size, I don't know exactly what image I want, so that they take a picture of it. And then I digitally to scale mock up a couple different options for them. And so they can kind of see a preview of how that looks. So I have that on there. And then also you can find me on Instagram at Mallory Morrison. And I love chatting. And any photographers out there that want to try this, I'm happy to answer any questions.
You mean create artwork and sell it, or are you talking specifically about underwater photography?
Both. I love having that conversation. I think that in a larger sense, photographers wanting to sell their work, it's daunting, or it's seen as the sort of afterthought of like, oh, I have a few pictures. That'd be fun to like put those up for sale and have some passive income. And I was like, let's talk about this. It's not passive. No. It needs to be very, very intentional, but it's possible.
Yeah.
And I think that's the important thing to be able to convey, is that it is possible. But I think that what I've had luck with is that the work needs to be there. Like, it's not just, oh, that's pretty, that would look good on a wall, maybe somebody would want that. It starts with having the work be really striking and memorable.
Yeah. Well, have you got a second or two or a minute or two just to,
yeah.
Because I'm on your collections page. So mallorymorrison.com/collections. And the first thing I see is exactly what we're told to do as portrait photographers and wedding photographers, is actually show the products that you're selling. And the first page here, or the landing page, is, you know, two side-by-side pieces above a sofa. And there's another one. It looks like in a reading room. It looks amazing. It looks like a gallery almost.
Yeah.
But when I look at those prints, which are incredible, so the ones on the right above the sofa, don't take offense to this, but they look like they could be canvas. They don't look like a fine art paper the way they've been framed. Is that how you're... What are they?
It's not real.
I know. Okay, right. So that's not real.
Okay, yeah. It's a digital mock-up. Yeah. Right,
but so can someone, if they see that, can they have that effect with your prints if they want them?
No.
Right. Okay. I guess that's curious.
you found one. Yeah. No, that was actually done by an artist that was, they did a few mock-ups for me just to see if that would be something that I could hire them to do a whole bunch. And I was like, I like these. These are really
they
cool.
Are.
But I've decided to, I'm able to do it myself. And so I usually have them mounted with a white frame as a mock-up, because that's usually how frame my work myself, but I do custom projects all the time. I actually am working with a mosaic company to have my work basically licensed. So they would print my work on a bunch, like to be able to have it be a mosaic tile installation in a restaurant. So, you know, there's so many different ways of having my work printed on things so that it's not just, this is the only way. And so this, because this is my, it is my store and I do offer this, like here, this is how I offer it, but it's also my general website of this is me as an artist and this is my work and it can be seen and presented in multiple ways.
Okay. So, but if I was to go to your online store, your shop, and I purchase, let's say one of these images here, the Deep, for example, then do I get that as a fine art print with a little white border?
Yes.
Unframed, unmatted. That comes in a tube, basically.
Yes, it does. Because that's the easiest way to be able to have that shipped anywhere is to ship it in a tube. Also, framing is such a personal choice for the space. Some people like to have things matted. Some people want to have a gilded gold frame, or they want a very thin, you know, clear, whatever, I don't know, whatever works for the space. So I don't want to make, first of all, that decision for someone, but also I don't want that decision to be a reason why somebody doesn't buy the piece.
Absolutely, for sure.
Because I've made that design decision on the artwork. So this allows for that finishing to be theirs. And also it is just a pain to ship.
Absolutely.
To ship framed work. It's expensive for them. It's unnecessary. And, you know, potential damages, all of that is already, it's already part of the process with a print, but it gets even more probable with a frame.
For sure. Mally, I've got two last questions just to ask you quickly. One in regard to prints.
Yeah.
Have you, and if so, how, have you been surprised at something selling, you know, exceedingly more than something else? Have you been surprised at your best sellers or not?
A few of them. Yeah, there's one, it's called Exploration and it's in my bestsellers and she's in a pink little leotard with these kind of wing sleeves. And I've been so surprised that people want to buy this one so much because generally I've found the kind of rule that I go by is that when you're taking a picture of a person who is more like, who wants to buy a picture of a stranger? They don't want to buy a portrait of a stranger, but they could buy a piece of art with a person in it. And that's really kind of what I try to focus on making sure I have enough of is like when I'm, because I'm actually working on my new series now and trying to select which ones I want to have end up in the series, I'm considering, it's not the only thing, I'm not letting it drive all of my decisions, but I am trying to consider, is this sellable? Is someone going to want this in their home? And if you see too much of their face, it starts to become more of like a portrait. Yeah. And then it's a portrait of a stranger in their house. And that's a little bit harder to sell. You know, people, if they're going to have a portrait of someone in their house, they want it to be of them or their family, or sometimes like celebrity, or if it, you know, if it's something like an interesting little portrait of a celebrity or something, it's like somebody that they know or know of. And so that has been kind of a guidepost for me, is to make sure that the images don't have it's not too much of a portrait. And that one to me feels so much like a portrait because it's so close up of the person, but the lighting was going well, the color, just everything.
That's amazing.
You know, it's got a lot of energy.
Yeah. Out of all the images on the bestsellers page, that's the one where the model is the most recognizable.
Yes.
You couldn't see any other model and know who they were. Mm-hmm. Amazing. That's so cool. Last question for you. When you hear the term AI, what do you think of?
Cautiously optimistic. I think I'm actually utilizing a little bit of generative fill and generative AI in Photoshop right now with my new series. And so it's a tool when it comes to creating art, how I'm utilizing it. I want to be able to use, you know, ChatGPT. I want to be using that to help me with my writing, any kind of like posts or emails, because words are not my favorite. So it helps. It's been a great tool for me. And then within the visual space, I have been able to kind of utilize it for mostly kind of time saving for me, because I'm trying to do a whole kind of background sort of set. I've got this handmade kelp forest that I've made and I need to make more of them. And so that makes my life so much easier to have Photoshop double those or multiply them rather than compositing multiple images together. So that's how I'm using it currently. But, and I do love seeing AI created work because it really kind of just pushes your imagination even further. It pushes it beyond what's physically possible, but it's presented in kind of a photographic medium. And the only thing that I feel like I get frustrated about is when someone doesn't say that it's AI created, or it's like, it's not like very obvious. It's like, hey, this was AI. Yeah. Or they're trying to maybe pass it off. And then you got to just look at the hands and see if there's too many fingers.
True.
That'll change soon.
That's right. It'll catch up. That is for sure. Yeah. Mallory, you've been amazing. Thank you so much for coming on, for sharing everything you have. Your work is absolutely incredible. I'm going to push the listener to go and check out your Instagram and encourage them to go and check out the show notes where we'll have some of your images and links to where people can find you. So, look, massive thanks for coming on. Congratulations on your success and congratulations on your incredible talent. You're amazing.
Thank you so much, Andrew. It was a pleasure chatting.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mallory as much as I did. Mallory, if you are listening, thank you again so much for coming on, for sharing everything you have. I truly am inspired by your approach to photography, to your photography. Not only is the work incredible, but your approach to business, to staying true to your vision as a fine art photographer is, it's amazing. So look, again, massive thanks for coming on and sharing everything you did, Mallory. For you, the listener, I'd love to hear your thoughts on Mallory's approach. Would you be willing to stick with your aspirations to be a fine art photographer? Or would you take the easier, easier in air quotes, approach and become an underwater photographer to dancers en masse and generate an income that way? I'd love to hear your thoughts on what Mallory had to share. Let me know in the comments area of the show notes, or if you are a premium member, let's talk about it inside the members Facebook group. I'll be adding Mallory to our group, so if you do have a follow-up question, you can hit her up in there, or if you just want to say thanks for coming on or letting her know what you think about her photography, please do that inside the members group or get in touch with her via social media. I've got links to anywhere and everywhere you can find her and anything that she mentioned in the show notes for today's episode. This week, they're at photobizx.com/560.
It's shout out time.
I've got one big shout out for today's episode. And this one goes to San Diego dog photographer Alexis Heiser in the USA. And she says in her Google review, I've been listening to Andrew's podcast actively for over a year now and a premium member for over 6 months, and it's something I look forward to every Tuesday. It truly doesn't matter what niche you specialize in, there is more than enough information to gain knowledge and endless inspiration and ideas. The diversity of guests, specifically the niches that exist in photography, is very helpful. I believe you can learn something from everyone if you are open to it, and the Photo Biz X podcast epitomizes it. How good is that? Alexis, thank you so much for taking the time to leave that review. I have added a link to your website and I'm using a keyword phrase that I'm guessing you're looking to rank for as anchor text as well to help you with your SEO. It's my little way to say thanks for leaving that wonderful review. So again, massive thanks. And I've got to say, I checked out your website. I love your work and your story and about your dog. And yeah, very, very cool. So thank you again so much, Alexis. Alrighty, that is just about going to wrap up this episode of the podcast. I just received a DM from Joel Dunn while I was recording the intro and outro. I got him to check out the registration page that I designed for his upcoming masterclass on the community fundraising lead generation strategy. And he said in the PM after he checked out the registration page, looks good, mate. Maybe just add that this strategy is 100% not reliant on social media at all, and that we used this strategy alone to generate over $200,000 a year for our studio. That's some pretty important points there. So again, if you want to go and check out the registration page, it's at photobizx.com/community. Make sure you register before the price doubles and get this implemented into your business to give you a way to diversify your marketing, get away from Facebook ads, or at least give yourself another options in case they do stop working or they get more and more expensive, as they're likely to do. And either way, it just makes good common sense to diversify your marketing as much as possible. So go and check it out, see if it's a good fit for you. There's definitely some photographers this will not be good for, and I've got those listed there on the registration page. So photobizx.com/community. Hopefully we'll see you on the live call in a couple of weeks' time. Alrighty, that really is it for this episode of the podcast. I've got to wrap things up because there are roof cleaners working just near me. They're on a lunch break right now, so I've jumped in to record this intro and outro. I know they're going to start up their water blasters again shortly, and there will be a horrible hum throughout the episode if I continue to record. So have a great week. Stay safe, healthy, and well wherever you are in the world, and I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.
If you've enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.